up to yonder, beyond the lights, neon, fluorescent. My essence is something to ponder. Your talent ain't something to squander. Blessed and favored so highly, anointed and portrait I might be. This is that all that podcast featuring Kyrie.
Welcome to another episode of the All That Podcast. Today I have my cousin who I've been rocking with for since kindergarten. I was in kindergarden.
So it's what, 1999?
Yeah, for the 2000, you hear me?
But yeah, really taking over.
For real, for real. So, man, I've been wanting to have this conversation, this podcast with this extremely rare, strong, intelligent, anywhere you come up with, woman. So today we're going to talk about a little about what she's been through. We're going to talk about the problems or some of the roadblocks that people have to deal with dealing with, you know, the medical world and all that, the hangups. We're going to talk about family. We're going to talk about so much. But without further ado, let me welcome my guest, Miss Chloe Thomas. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, Kyrie.
Yeah, you know, we got the Thomas Train shirts on.
Choo-choo!
Yeah.
We'll all
tell you, right? We'll tell you about that a little later on. But yeah, so I just want to have you on because I can't even talk about this in past tense and say you had an incredible story. You have an incredible story that's still progressing to this day. So Chloe has been through a lot. She was in a coma for how long were you in a coma?
I was in a coma for about a week.
A week?
Yeah. And I actually came out of the coma 4 years ago today.
Wow. Look at that. We are doing 4 years ago today. She came out of the coma and now we're doing this podcast. Yeah. See, look at that. Look at God. Right.
Yeah.
So, you had to go through a loss of an eye.
Yeah, it's been through some stuff.
So, I guess before we get into everything else, you can just tell or explain to the audience a little bit about your story.
Well, I was gonna try to do this without getting emotional. I thought I would have got emotional a little further on in the episode, but here we are. September of 2017 was Hurricane Harvey. My family and I, we lost everything. We were flooded out of our home in Port Arthur, Texas, and relocated to Tyler, Texas, just so that we could get our bearings and all of that good stuff. And I was noticing some physical issues even before the hurricane. And so, you know, I'm just thinking maybe it's just stress. You know, it's just a lot going on. But then I found myself in the ER every week. Wow. With severe vomiting, nausea, I couldn't eat. It was just very, I didn't want to go anywhere. Mm-hmm. Even though the hurricane had taken the vehicle that I had, flooded it out, I was blessed to be able to get my dream car, you know, and that was my baby. I called it a Batmobile. Like, I had big plans for her. Like, yeah. we was going to be driving through like Bruce Wayne, you know? and so was going through that. It was just, and it was consistent. It wasn't like, it would come, well, I'm going to say it was a little bit more sporadic, but it was consistently sporadic. So I would maybe go a week or two without an issue and then 3 or 4 weeks with a consistent issue. Right. And it got to the point where, well, hold on, let me back up. In January of 2018, which was right after the hurricanes, my mom suffered from several strokes and became bedbound. And my sister and I, we have a real mama. We got a real mama.
Right.
And so seeing her in that condition, literally overnight, it did something to us. And it really caused me to put my own health on the back burner. Mm-hmm. Actually, after one of her strokes, when my sister called me, she had come up to the hospital to see me because I was actually in the hospital at the time. She told me, you know, when mama's not doing good, I don't know what's really wrong with her. I signed myself out of the hospital AMA because I'm going to go see about my mama.
Right.
I felt stable enough to leave, and so I left.
Mm-hmm.
But then fast forward, 2018, I like to say, was my mama's year. That was her year of, you know, trying to recover and figure out what was going on with her.
Mm-hmm.
So then 2019 comes. January 2019, I go into the hospital because I was having difficulty breathing and I could not eat, and anything that I ingested either came up or came out.
Mm-hmm.
It was bad.
Yeah.
And so I went into the hospital, and this kind of brings me to one of my points I'm going to refer to later on.
Mm-hmm.
But about knowing your insurance coverages, just know them. Went into the hospital. I was diagnosed with what they called mycoplasma pneumonia, and which was according to them, was an incredibly contagious form of pneumonia. So they would have to dress up in PPE and the whole gear, get up like they did for COVID,
mm-hmm.
PPE, when they would come into my room to administer meds, et cetera.
Right.
Well, unbeknownst to me, during that time, they were already running tests. Because they were thinking that my kidneys were failing.
Mm.
And so they did a kidney biopsy on me while I was in the hospital, but they did not make it seem like it was urgent. It was like, yeah, we did this biopsy. It's going to take a while for the results to come back, but schedule an appointment with nephrology and we'll, you know, discuss them when you come into the office. So I'm like, okay, it ain't a big deal. My dad was on dialysis. He was in kidney failure, really, from, matter of fact, Kyrie, around the time I met you.
Wow.
He had started dialysis and stuff. So I was 9 years old, and he died when I was 20. Mm-hmm. So you can essentially say my whole life I knew about this.
Right.
Family vacations had to center around where he could get dialysis. If we even went on family vacation,
right,
was centered around that. And so I get out of the hospital. They put me on oral antibiotics. And they're like, hey, just finish the course of antibiotics for the remainder of your infection. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay, cool. So I'm home a day, one day. And I'm trying to be good. I had got some grilled chicken, mm-hmm. you know, all that good stuff. I'm drinking water and Gatorade. That's mm-hmm. all I'm drinking. I was able to get down two pills. So a morning dose and an evening dose.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next day, I was just vomiting water. Like, everything that I had ingested was coming up just the way it went down. So it hadn't even gotten to my stomach to be able to be processed.
Right.
So I call my sister and I tell her, now, mind you, I have an amazing husband, yo cuz, Kev. but he worked out of town.
Mm.
And so my sister was in Tyler with me. And so I called her and told her, hey, look, I think I'm going to need to go back to the hospital because they put me on these antibiotics, but I can't keep them down and I don't want the infection in my lungs to get worse.
Mm-hmm.
So she was fully supportive of that, and we went. So, and I went to the ER. I get to the ER, explain the situation, I get admitted. By this point, my symptoms have ballooned. I mean, I'm unable to keep myself together,
mm-hmm.
for lack of a better phrase.
Yeah.
I'd had severe swelling in my legs and feet to the point where I wasn't able to even wear shoes, like real shoes. Mm-hmm. I had to wear them hospital socks with the grippies,
right,
everywhere I went. So then that made me not want to go anywhere. Cause I mean, hey, I'm young. I'm 27, yeah. 28 years old. Like,
right.
I'm at the prime of my life.
Yeah.
Okay. get into it. But, so I get to the hospital and, As you know, I'm a very eloquent person. I'm college educated. I can explain what's going on. I'm not a huge ummer.
Yeah.
I have my thoughts together, and mm-hmm. I knew what was going on with me, so I'm explaining it to the medical team so that way they can treat me properly because they have access to things that I don't have access to.
Right.
They admit me to the hospital, and that night was one of the worst. And when I say one of the worst, it's like my body knew I was in the hospital and just started tripping. I mean, it got so bad to, I told the CNA, the little tech that comes in the room and checks your blood pressure and stuff, just leave them bed pads over there and I'm going to deal with this. I'll clean this up because you could be my grandmother, ma'am. I'm not about to have you doing this, even though it is your job. I don't know.
Right.
So I finally asked the nurse if I could, if she could get the doctor to prescribe me some, an antidiarrheal. And she said, yeah. So the doctor did that. Finally got some relief. The next morning he comes. A friend of mine had also come to bring me like a bag of, with like a change of clothes and some other toiletry stuff. And she worked at Chick-fil-A. So before she came to bring me my stuff, she asked me, hey, I got to make a delivery at the hospital. Do you want something from here? I asked this girl to bring me some chicken noodle soup. And a small diet lemonade. That was it. So she comes, she brings it. I take one sip of the lemonade, and the soup wasn't even opened. I didn't even eat it. She said, oh, I forgot something else in my car. She goes down to the car, but she's coming back up. We in the car. She's, soon as she leaves, the doctor comes to make rounds. He takes one look at the tray with the Chick-fil-A contraband on it. And he says, oh, you must be feeling just fine. You got Chick-fil-A. You eating Chick-fil-A? I said, I'm not eating Chick-fil-A.
Yeah.
I haven't taken one bite of this. This is soup. This is diet lemonade. And they're still very much so full.
Yeah.
And he looked in the trash. And my friend had had a biscuit with the hash browns and all that. Her trash is in the garbage.
Yeah.
He doesn't see her. So he's all like, well, you were eating Chick-fil-A, so I don't see the point in keeping you here, blah, 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 blah. So basically he says that he's going to discharge me from the hospital. This was on February the 1st of 2019. I'm panicking. I'm like, sir, no, you don't understand. Something is wrong. I can't breathe at night when I lay down. It's bad. Like, you know, it's something is wrong. I have all this swelling on my legs. He completely ignored me, did not care, and walked out the room. I immediately contacted patient advocacy because you think patient advocacy is supposed to be there for the patient. They are not. They're there to protect the hospital. So don't ever mistake it. Okay. She comes, acts like they had some big meeting of the minds regarding me, and said that they're going to stick behind what the doctor said. Said, okay. So I called my sister. And you know Clover. You know her.
Yeah.
I'm her first baby, you know. And she was so, because I was trying to keep it together for her when I called. Like, hey, they're discharging me.
Yeah.
You can come pick me up. And all I said was, sissy, they're discharging. And it's like, I lost, and she was like, Chloe, what's wrong? And I told her, like, I'm scared. I'm gonna go home, and it's going to be bad. I'm not going to live. And so she said, just come on downstairs. We'll take care of it. 2.5 weeks later, I'm back at the same hospital because it's 20 degrees in Tyler, Texas. I'm burning up. Can't breathe. I'm on fire. The EMS people come to my house to get me out of my apartment. And they're trying to put blankets and jackets and all this on me. And I'm sweating bullets. Like, it's really bad. And so they're thinking, like, I'm on drugs or, like, I'm having withdrawals of some kind. Like, I haven't been fully transparent about what I've ingested or whatever. So my sister follows the ambulance to the hospital because I finally just passed out. Like, I just couldn't breathe. Mm-hmm. Get to the hospital. They're kind of lollygagging about my condition in a way. So they check my labs, and one of the numbers that they pay attention to is creatinine in regard to your kidneys. Mine was through the roof. Mm-hmm. I mean, off the charts, just like yours truly. So they were concerned about that. They ended up inserting a catheter to measure my output because they didn't want me getting up because they didn't know if I was going to pass out again. And my sister was with me the whole time. They gave me a diuretic, and they came back to check. The nurse checked the bag. I had less than an inch of urine in the bag. Okay. Maybe I didn't give her enough Lasix. Maybe I didn't give her enough of it. So she calls the doctor. He authorizes for her to give me more. And she does. She comes back to check. It's a little bit more in the bag, but not much. So she pulls my sister to the side, and she asks if I had a history of kidney problems. My sister said no. And she's like, okay. Then it was all hands on deck. It was just like, fire in the hole. Like, it got real, real crazy. At first, I was like a priority six patient. And then I jumped up to priority one. Because in the waiting area, they have like this big old screen. And it'll have the priorities listed. One to, I think, seven. And I started off here at a six. And all of a sudden, you see 28-year-old black female priority one.
Right.
So after that, there's really not much I remember. I remember going to my hospital room when they admitted me and put me in an actual room. And they started telling me about dialysis, that I would probably have to start that within the next 6 months to a year. And that they would need to do a fistula. A fistula is a dialysis access. So what they do is they go in your arm and they tie an artery and a vein together. So that way, during your treatment, one side is pulling the blood out of your body. The other side is cycling the filtered blood back in. And so during dialysis, a lot of people don't understand. They think it's just like it's dialysis, whatever. No, this is exhausting. I once had to do dialysis with a lady who had breast cancer, who had to undergo chemotherapy. She said, I would choose chemotherapy over this any day.
Wow.
And when I asked her why, she said, with chemotherapy, there's a foreseeable end. They tell you, you're going to have to do it this many weeks or this many times, and then you stop and you wait. The waiting may, get in your head, but at least you get a break. With this, there is no breaks. You get a break when you get a transplant or when you die. That's the break. And so that was very startling and emotional for me because I'm 28. My husband and I not only love each other, we like each other. So we had been planning to, we had a vacation to Jamaica plan that we couldn't go on with some friends of ours. Because my mobility had been affected so badly.
Yeah.
Just being able to walk because of all the fluid I was carrying. So, in the hospital bed, they weigh you if you can't get up. The bed said I weighed 240. No. And it's not just the whole black woman, I'm going to be thin forever, forever young, forever small, forever svelte. That wasn't the case. But I knew that I did not weigh that much. Number one, I had not been eating enough to even pack on that amount of weight. They still went with the 240 weight and scheduled my surgery. So the next day, the surgery was scheduled maybe 2 days later. Wasn't the very next day. So my sister came to visit me and at night, and I was getting ready to like take a shower and just get in bed and get ready to go sleep. Mm-hmm. And I told her, cause she was getting ready to go out with a friend, and I looked at her and I said, "You look so pretty. You look so pretty. I hope you have a really good time." And she was like, "Oh, thank you." You know, she gave me a hug and stuff. And I looked at her and I said, "Sissy, I don't want to die." Just like that. "I don't want to die." And that's when she just started really building me up and speaking into me. You know, "You shall live and not die. Death and life are in the power of the tongue." You know, Kyrie, all the stuff that we're taught as children. Mm-hmm. You know, in the church, what to confess over yourself and what to speak over yourself in those moments. Mm-hmm. And even though right then I couldn't say all of what she was saying, I was able to muster up, "I don't want to die."
Right.
So she left. And then the surgery was scheduled for, I think, 11 the next morning. Well, they came in my room the day of the surgery and said that they had a cancellation and that they could move me up. Well, we the type of family, you don't just have no surgery and don't have nobody there to support you.
Right.
You know, and my sister was home trying to coordinate my mom's care. She also has a 7-year-old at the time. Mm-hmm. So making sure that she has what she needs and she's not feeling neglected in any kind of way. Because this is a lot. We're a very close-knit family.
Right.
And so when they told me that, I called her and she said, "Okay, I can rearrange this for mom. I can do this." I said, "Clover, don't worry about it." I said, "I'm not mad about it or nothing. I mean, we're just going to let it be what it's going to be. That's it." And the only way I can describe how I felt was the inevitable was coming. There was nothing I could do about it. And no amount of people at that hospital was going to change mm-hmm. what I believe God wanted to do in that moment. So they came and got me, weighed me again, 240 pounds. Okay, y'all, I don't weigh that much.
Mm-hmm.
So they put me under general anesthesia and at the end of the surgery, literally from what was told to me, they put in the last staple in my arm to close up the incision, and I coded. They got me back. I coded again. They got me back. I coded again. So now we had 3 times. They get me back, and I'm back. But by this point, I had gone 25 minutes without oxygen. So my heart is beating, but they're concerned about my breathing.
Right.
So they've intubated me and done all this stuff. They've contacted my sister, and they tell her there were some complications. She's alive, but we do need someone to come to the hospital. We know what that means. Yeah. So, she gets up to the hospital. Her and her boyfriend, and the way God works is just so amazing. And that's why, like, Kyriana would be laughing, because mm-hmm. I always say how I'm God's favorite. But God is always looking out for me. And in this moment, I really began to see it. When the anesthesiologist came out to talk with my family, my sister said that man was so just gone. He was like, "I ain't never in my whole life seen anything this crazy." Because
mm-hmm.
he had been anesthesiologian as long as I've been alive.
Yeah.
So that's almost 30 years. So he walks in and he recognizes my sister's boyfriend. And he's like, "This is Clover? Oh, my gosh." You know, so it was almost like in that moment, he felt so good about not just saying, "Oh,
right.
another one bites the dust."
Right.
you know, he really worked on me to get me back.
And also, like, what's the, talking about how God works and you know, and how things work, the fact that Clover even brought the boyfriend in the first place, because she could have easily came by herself. You know?
No, she couldn't have, because she already knew what was up, and he had to drive her.
Got you.
It was.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Clover be trying to keep it all together, but my sister, you know, she don't play behind me.
Right.
She play about a lot of things.
Yeah.
That me ain't one of them.
No.
So. Yeah. And I know that there are secret things that belong to God that she'll never tell me about that experience.
Yeah.
But it was just so amazing that all the intricacies. Mm-hmm. We're just being put into perfect place.
Right.
So by this time, they had, she had gotten an update. They had wanted to put me in a hypothermic coma because they were concerned about my organs failing. So that's when they lower your body temperature to, I think I was at about 93 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
But they had to step your body down, and then it takes a couple days to bring you back up to normal temperature.
Gotcha.
And so... She calls your beloved cousin, Kev Kid.
Kev Kid.
And them two are like, I hate when he come to town because then I be feeling like the odd man out.
You feel like third wheel.
I be feeling like I'm third wheeling. Because it's like they could just sit in a room and not say nothing and just be communicating.
Yeah.
You know, I call it Junebug telepathy because their birthday's both in June.
Yeah.
But yeah, so she called him and was just like, hey, bro, listen, you're going to need to come up here and sign some paperwork because you're her next of kin and da-da-da-da-da.
Mm-hmm.
She's alive. And it's like he knew not to ask any additional questions and she knew not to volunteer any additional information. He gets in his Chevy. And gets from Port Arthur to a little bit outside of Woodville. The gas light come on, because he ain't got no gas. So he done pulled over. He gets the gas. He gets to the hospital.
Yeah.
And the whole time, like, I don't know any of this is going on.
Mm-hmm.
There's no concept of time. He gets there. He walks in. And my sister took a picture. That's the picture I usually post mm-hmm. when I'm in my feelings or when I want to really give him his flowers.
Right.
Of him looking at me with all these leads on my head and...
Got his hands behind his back.
Yeah, he got his hands behind his back because... I'm not going to lie. You may have to bring Clover on the podcast to talk about this from her perspective.
Perspective, yeah.
Because she said that she definitely saw two male nurses with syringes in their pockets. And she think they were tranquilizers. We really think they had ketamine in case something popped off and Kevin had to go down. They wasn't going to fight him. They was just going to shoot him up with their ketamine, and that was going to be it. He'll come back, but they'll give him time to strap him up, put him in that straitjacket. They could get him in the straitjacket. Because, you know, hey, that's a big dude. I ain't trying to fight him.
Right.
Shoot, his own daddy said, I'll never fight you.
Yeah.
But I do something else, but I'll never fight you.
Put you down.
Put you down. Big dog. Love you. But yeah, so then that's when things got really, really bleak. Things were very bleak. They had the little chaplain come. And I want to know why the chaplain don't never look like us. They sent this man. And I know he probably, you know, I know the Lord loves him too. But... This little white man, he was really short,
mm-hmm.
and he had his little flat front Docker pants.
Mm-hmm.
He comes with this Bible, and he's like, hello, how are you doing? It was just weird.
Just trying to scare
you. And so, mind you, this is all information I'm getting secondhand.
Right.
So, the doctors would come. They would do their examinations. They raised my body temperature, and so they said, okay, well, she should wake up within about 3 days. For the best results, we would hope for her to wake up in 3 days. Don't give me no time limit. I do what I want to do.
Right.
So 3 days comes and goes. Then they start coming to my sister talking about palliative care, mm-hmm. which is like a step below hospice. And Clover told them people, I'm gonna ask her about palliative care when she wake up.
I know they was like,
"Dang, Kyrie, I wish I could have recorded the looks these people had on their faces."
Yeah.
Based on the conversations I've had with Kevin and Clover, mm-hmm. So we're talking. So they're talking about the palliative care and stuff, and then a different nephrologist who was on the team, but it was his first time coming to see me.
Mm-hmm.
He says, "Well, have we started dialysis?" And they're like, "Well, no, because she hadn't woke up." He was like, "If she was under general anesthesia, the anesthesia has nowhere to go. It's processed through the kidneys. If her kidneys don't work,
yeah,
it can't get out of her system."
Mm-hmm.
So then everybody's like, "Huh." I feel like everybody did a Braxton P. Hardenbrig moment. Oh, like, uh-huh. Oh. So they tried that, and immediately they start getting a response of my neuro.
Mm-hmm.
My arms start moving. I'm trying to move my legs, and my eyes are still closed, but physically I'm moving.
Yeah.
So they get me up. They wake me up. Basically, I wake up, and the way I woke up was so crazy because I didn't wake up during the dialysis treatment.
Mm-hmm.
I was just laying in the bed, and my sister would always wear heels. Kevin would clock in at the hospital, so he was always there with me, like from 7 to 7, go home, go to sleep, if he could sleep, mm-hmm. and then be right back for the morning shift. So this particular day, I wake up, and I hear my sister, and I, like, turn my head, like, to the side, to the door.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like I hear click, clack, click, clack, click, then stop. Like, she's walking down the hallway. I hear somebody, talk to somebody, and then goes on. So she comes in the room. She finally makes it into the room, and she's like, "Oh, you're awake. Kevin looks like..." I'm sorry, what? And he looks at... He take off running to the nurse station. "She's awake. She awake. Hey, call a doctor. She awake." Yeah, you. "We seen you yesterday morning.
Yeah, come on, you go down."
not that aggressive, but you know us.
Yeah.
So they come to do their assessments. And I'm there, but I'm still not really there. Mm-hmm. I'm a little on the side. And my sister was like, "Well, she hungry. She ain't ate. Get her a feeding tube."
Yeah.
So I give me a feeding tube. And then Clover gives me the black mama conversation.
Mm-hmm.
The people think something wrong with you. You know ain't nothing wrong with you. And I know ain't nothing wrong with you. So if they tell you lift your arm, you lift your arm. If they mm-hmm. tell you blink your eyes, you blink your eyes. And I'm looking at her like, "I don't think you punking me, but all right." Okay. Because I know that's going to affect if I get how long it take me to get out of this place.
Right.
So when they come the next day, I gotten some nutrients and I'm a little better, but I'm still intubated.
Mm-hmm.
So they're asking me different questions. I'm identifying people as best as I can.
Mm-hmm.
So my neuro is fully intact because they had told Kevin, like, I was supposed to be at one threshold and I was significantly below that.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially I was brain dead. But God had other plans for me. So I spent another maybe week or two in the hospital, and then I went to a rehab facility for, like, skilled nursing and stuff mm-hmm. to help get my strength back because I wasn't able to walk. They had pulled all this fluid off my legs. So my legs went from looking like elephant trunks elephant legs to giraffe legs.
Mm-hmm.
Over the course of a couple of weeks. And so I didn't know how to deal with that. Like, what am I doing?
Right.
So But because of the muscle atrophy and whatnot, I use a wheelchair just for safety reasons.
Yeah.
But like I tell my niece all the time, this is just a prop. Please don't think I won't come after you. Do with that what you will.
So let me ask you this right quick, since we got about 20 minutes left, but I want to get this in, because I know it's important for you to push home the patient advocacy points, and you know,
absolutely.
I'm thinking about what you said about the doctor, you know, telling you, oh, you can eat Chick-fil-A, well, you don't need to be here. We're gonna discharge you, and you telling him, and you hear these stories all the time about, especially pertaining to Black women specifically, yeah, and how the doctors don't listen to them, and they, you know, and it often results in fatalities. So can you speak to some of the inner workings and how to work the system and things that people that might find themselves in a situation that you're in, how they need to go about navigating that world?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. First things first is, if you are insured, know your coverages. Know if you have an HMO or a PPO. It does make a difference. I'm not going to explain that on this particular form, because that's what that little 800 number on the back of the card is for. You call that 800 number and you ask them, hey, I don't understand any of this. Can you explain it to me?
Right.
And that's what they're there for. That's what they're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
The next thing is, don't feel like just because you've been, there's such a thing as patient-provider chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
You may have had the same doctor for 10 years, and then one day you go to them, and they rub you the wrong way, and you're not really feeling them no more.
Right.
You have the right to transfer your care elsewhere.
Just like her relationship.
Just cut it.
You know?
Cut it. So you do have that right to change your care.
Mm-hmm.
Even in the hospital. If you're in a hospital, they assign you a hospitalist. That person comes in. You like, oh, nah, this ain't it. Send me somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, they'll get offended and they'll try to act like you don't have that right. You do.
Mm-hmm.
You do. You definitely do.
Just got to stay persistent.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You have to stay persistent. And there's nothing wrong with being a noisemaker.
Right.
There's absolutely nothing wrong with
it.
This is
your life.
This is real life.
They life on the line is yours.
Absolutely. So. Another thing is, a lot of people, when they hear those the prices for like the deductibles and the co-pays, mm-hmm, et cetera, they freak out, and then they decide to not seek care because they don't feel that they can afford it. I'm gonna give you two words.
Mm-hmm.
Bill me.
Yeah.
They can bill you. You can work around it and have some form of pay them something.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, there's no price on your life. You cannot put a price on your life. And waiting for something to get better usually makes it worse.
Right.
I also wanted to say that with the whole patient provider relationship thing,
mm-hmm,
another thing I want to address is transparency. Allowing your family to be, making sure that you're transparent, not only with your doctor, mm-hmm, be transparent with yourself, be transparent with your family and your loved ones, the people who are, you know, going to be looking out for you, you know, if something were to happen.
Mm-hmm.
To this day, I'm so thankful that I have the type of family where we tell each other the truth.
Right.
And so if I had an alcohol problem, my sister would have known that for real.
Mm-hmm.
If I had a drug problem, she would have known that for real. And then we could have maneuvered that, navigated that however we needed to.
Right.
But I was honest. I was open. The most I could say is, hey, look, I'm diabetic. I don't always take my medication like I'm supposed to, and I drink a Coke from every
right
now and
then. Right.
Let's see. And after your treatment and stuff in the medical community, get your records. Let me tell you something. A lot of hospitals charge for their records because they don't want the patients to get them.
Mm.
They know you're not going to spend the money on that.
Yeah.
You'll buy crab legs, but you ain't going to buy these records.
Yeah.
Buy the records because that is the official document. A doctor can say whatever he wants to say. Kyrie, I could probably take over your show with how many times doctors have said things in my records, misunderstandings in my records because of just simple misunderstanding. Quick story. I know we're running out of time. Go ahead. But when I was in the hospital, fairly new to dialysis, but I did know that I could not take oral potassium because of the fact that potassium does not filter out. So my dialysis treatment that I do 3 times a week is what gets the potassium out of my system. So my nephrologist prefers that my potassium be lower than higher because when it's too high, then you start running into cardiac issues. A nurse comes running in my room freaking out because the potassium was low, excuse me, and brings me 2 big old tablets. They're like horse pills. And I just politely tell her, oh, ma'am, I can't take that. So you're refusing? Ma'am, it's not a refusal. I'm a dialysis patient. I can't take that. Next thing I know, the lady walks out the room in a huff, and I got a new nurse. Like, why are you offended? I was trying to help you. I was trying to keep you from having a case.
Right. Right.
Bitch, I won't try to help you no more.
Right.
So, so it's those types of things that you got to know about. And it sucks that in the medical community, these doctors go to school and they do all this schooling. And then we still got to come behind them and fact check them and make sure that they know that they're properly doing their job because we're the ones in these bodies and we're the ones whose lives are at risk, not nobody else's. And I'm just thankful that you did allow me to come on here today because everybody does want to talk about the pregnant black women, the maternal side of death and all of that when it comes to black women. But for those of us who have not been able to enjoy the beauty of having children just yet, we got it bad too over here. And so I really just feel like we all should be working together to break down this system and change some things.
Right. So the keys that I got from that is, you know, be vocal and know your stuff because this is your life that's at stake. Not the nurses or the doctors' life. This is your life. So you need to speak up on behalf of yourself, which Chloe has never had a problem doing.
Actually, I did.
Really?
I really did. During this process. During this process, okay. I definitely did. Simply because I felt like, well, my life is in their hands. Like, they could do something to me.
Oh, okay. I see it from that.
You know, I felt very vulnerable. I was the most vulnerable I'd ever been in my life.
I see it. So, okay, we talked about my cousin and how, you know, he was there for you, obviously, as your husband. And I'll tell him all the time, you know, I text him. I probably made posts, you know, about it, about just observing, you know, him. Two people, actually. We're talking about him right now, but also my cousin Justin and his situation. But him right now, we're talking about Kevin, you know, just observing how he handled the situation, how strong he was for his family, him being there for you was something that was admirable to his little cousin and something I looked at. So what do you have to say to your husband?
Well, first things first, you know, Kevin is a gentle giant and he is very, you know, he doesn't express a lot of emotion. He does not allow people to see him in a vulnerable spot. And so, you know, when we got married all those years ago, those many years ago in 2014.
Many moons.
you know, we wrote our own vows. And at the end of mine, I said, this is forever. We are forever. And I meant that. And some of the things that he said, you know, just about me having made him a better person and helping him reconnect with his family and stuff like that. And I saw everything that we had said in our vows come into play at some point throughout this, because we are each other's person.
Mm-hmm.
100%. As much as I love my sister and talk with her and stuff, mm-hmm. like, she know, like, she's still my person in another way.
Right.
But for Kevin, it's like to know that your person is in this condition, not even able to talk to you. Can't even say, baby, it's going to be all right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I know that he had to truly rely on God. And that was a relationship that we had worked on together, even for myself. We both grew up in church, but, you know, you do your own thing. And right. So to Kevin, even though we are gearing up literally for the fight of our lives,
mm-hmm.
with, you know, my heart transplant and the kidney transplant coming up, don't get weary. I love you so much. So, so very much. And I'm so grateful to have been blessed to have him as my life partner. Because when I was laid up in that bed, Kyrie, men have left their women for much less. Much, much less. And so for him to not only stay with me, but to continue to protect me, to continue to defend me, to continue to, he even stepped up even more, you know, just with my medical stuff. When they was trying to give me penicillin as an allergy right before I lost my eye,
mm-hmm.
he in the hospital said, no, what you trying to give her? That's penicillin. She can't have that. You know, he's being vocal.
Right.
That meant so, so much to me. So that's why, like, you know, when I go on a book tour, and I know people talk about Tabitha Brown, but she ain't the only one trying to retire her husband.
Right.
She is not the only one.
Right.
So when y'all see him in the pickup line picking up the kids.
Right. In that
mind
GMC.
Your business. Just
that,
mind your business.
In that GMC.
The Denali.
And the Denali.
Mind your business.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because he got to get home and make dinner.
All right.
But I love you, babe. I love you, Boo Bear.
Van, Sherman, Kevin. Man, okay, so in closing, y'all see we had these Thomas Train shirts on. So, Chloe, tell the people a little bit about the Thomas Train and what's that all about.
The Thomas Train, all aboard!
Choo-choo!
The Thomas Train is basically my journey in regard to the heart transplant and the kidney transplant. You can go to my website, www.thomastrain.life. That's www.thomastrain.life. And you can check out the story there. There's some pictures there. There's some, you can get merch there. I got some new merch that'll be dropping just in time for the springtime. I got some crop tops, got some other stuff going on. So, but that'll be your go-to location for all things related to Chloe and her heart journey, her heart and kidney journey. If you would like to donate, feel free. The links are there. Cash App, Venmo, PayPal. Shameless plug, all of the things.
Right.
I'll be dropping an Amazon wish list as well for stuff for my surgery once things get a little bit closer. So, hopefully by May, we really should be rocking and rolling with that.
Let's get it. You gave Kevin's flowers. Let me give you yours. As somebody, you know, who has, like we say, been knowing you forever, I just, you know, sit back in awe of the sheer courage, I think is the best word, for you to keep going. For you to keep going with the fight. I know, because we talk, I know you have your moments, right? But you still, and it's amazing to me, like, and I'm pretty sure it's amazing to everybody else that's been following your story, who's close to you, and you see you making these jokes, calling yourself Lazarisha, all this, you know, all of this. So I'm telling you, and we just spoke about this in the car, is that we know, and you know, that this is a chapter, not the end of the book. right? Absolutely. This is a continuation, and you know that God is bringing you through this because you are the person that can handle this and that can do with the message that what he wants you to do. Absolutely. Right? Just like you said, we're going on his book tour. You know, we're going to retire Kev, have him in a pickup line in the Denali. You know what I mean? So I just want to say, as little cousin, me looking at your courage and your strength, and if I'm complaining about something, I like, I have no room to complain. If Chloe is going through going through, and she can still put on a smile, and she can still crack jokes, and she can still continue to fight on. So let me tell you that, you know, you are somebody that anybody could look up to and anybody should look up to, and you're a beast. Thank you, Chloe, for coming on. I hope
you
guys,
for having me.
Yes, I hope you guys got blessed, got some information about how the medical world works, and got inspired by her story. Like I said, you know, we all, you know, complain and you know, about trivial things, but until you hear something like this and you see a person continue to fight, continue to get up every morning, continue to put one foot in front of the other one, you know, you kind of look at your situation and you'd be like, you know, maybe I could chill out on complaining so much and kind of change my perspective on things. So once again,
pipe down a little bit.
So yeah, once again, I hope you guys got encouraged, got, you know, moved by this story. A lot of this stuff, you know, I heard for the first time, you know, through this conversation. So thank you for coming on, Chloe, once again, being vulnerable, sharing your story, you know, turning your test into your testimony.
Your
mess into your message.
Come on now.
You know what I mean?
Won't he do it?
Won't he do it? So, yeah, that is it for this episode of the All That Podcast. Revert back. I'll put it in the description for the Thomas Train stuff, how you guys get involved with that, and support Chloe on her ongoing journey. And with that, we are out. See you next week. Peace. This is that all.